This is the final lecture. We will take a look at a number of diplomatic rituals between China and Japan. One of the Chinese complaints against Japan as a state is that they have never made any proper apology for their wartime behavior and atrocities in China. But there have been quite proper diplomatic apologies, especially those by Murayama Tomiichi, who was prime minister in 1994-96, and Koizumi Junichiro, who was prime minister from 2001 to 2006. In the 50 and 60 years anniversaries of the end of the Second World War. Murayama's statement on 15 August 1995, he said like this. During a certain period in the not too distant past, Japan, following a mistaken national policy, so it was a mistake, bad thing to do, advanced along the road to war, only to ensnare the Japanese people in a fatal crisis, and through its colonial rule and aggression, caused tremendous damage and suffering to the people of many countries, particularly to those of Asian nations. In the hope that no such mistake be made in the future, I regard, in a spirit of humility, so he is showing humility, these irrefutable facts of history. This is important because at this time they were also quarreling about Japanese textbooks used in Japanese schools. Some history books displayed more openly, more deeply, more carefully Japanese atrocities in China, and some did not. So Murayama is saying that these facts are irrefutable. And express here once again my feelings of deep remorse and state my heartfelt apology. Allow me to express my feelings of profound mourning for all victims, both at home and abroad, of that history. This was a fairly clear apology. What followed out of this was good relations between Japan and China. Lots of Japanese companies moving into China, and so on. State visits, tourist visits. We move forward 10 years to Koizumi statement on 15 August 2005. In the past, Japan, through its colonial rule and aggression, caused tremendous damage and suffering to the people of many countries, particularly to those of Asian nations. Sincerely facing these facts of history, I once again express my feelings of deep remorse and heartfelt apology, and also express the feelings of mourning for all victims, both at home and abroad in the war. I am determined not to allow the lessons of that Holy War to erode, and to contribute to the peace and prosperity of the world without ever again waging a war. This was also a proper diplomatic apology, but this did not have much effect for two reasons. One is that the textbook conferences were still raging onwards, and Koizumi visited Japanese Shinto shrine, Yasukuni shrine, where all the dead of the Second World War, Japanese soldiers were enshrined. They are still there as souls, some flying in the garden and trees and whatever, or the shrine. But anyway, this was considered a bad thing in China. And Koizumi was not able to meet any Chinese leaders, even though he made this apology. The other thing may be that at this time, China already had become so strong that they would have wanted something else, more proper humbleness than simple words, even though they, I think they were quite heartfelt words from Koizumi. Other things what Koizumi was saying, I will hear the Japanese original and then the translation. These translations are mine. In 2002, Higuchi Shinsei could say that 60% of Asia's GDP is created by Japan. He was the last Japanese prime minister who could present Japan as a great power. Only an economic great power, but anyway, a great power. For a long time, Japan has been the world's greatest donor of development aid. Japanese foreign policy was much based on the fact that it was an affluent country with large trade surpluses. So it was able to give lots of development aid all over the world, but especially to Asian countries, including China. And this is not about China, but about Southeast Asian countries. On a visit to ASEAN, he said that Japan and ASEAN are walking as friends and advancing as friends. Now we have to understand diplomatic etiquette. Friend is a special term in diplomatic language. It has been used for hundreds of years, and its meaning is that a stronger power proposes friendship to weaker powers. Soviet Union and Finland used to have an agreement of friendship and cooperation. Again, it was a strong power proposing this kind of agreement to the weaker power. Friendship means a contract to our relationship between a strong power and a weak power. And a weak power does not propose friendship. Weak power simply talks about good relationships. To be a friend is the term that a strong power says to a weaker power. So Koizumi was still speaking like the prime minister of great power. And he was the last. Well, his foreign minister at the end of his term was Aso Taro, who was also later a prime minister of Japan. This speech is from the time when he was the foreign minister, but when he was prime minister, he said that he still thinks in the same way. He placed Japan in the position of a thought leader. So Japan has ideas that may be useful for other Asian countries. And he also said young democracies or young hearts wishing for democracy tend to be emotional, which is a reference especially perhaps to Koreans and Taiwanese, or wishing for democracy, but also to China, that they tend to take things too emotionally. And of course, if you think of the Second World War, all the people who had fought there were dead by then. Nobody living person had experienced the war or suffered. We deal here with politics of memory. What kind of things are taken up from history and remembered publicly and taken as emotional national issues in terms of public discussion? So ASO placed Japan in a position where it knows better what to do than other Asian countries, not anymore as a great power, but the country that has experienced it all and can behave in a cool, experienced, wise manner, while the other Asians tend to be emotional. Well, this speech was not received very well in other Asian countries, because it was still talking from the top downwards. Abe Shinzo, the next one. In China, the leaders stay in power for 10 years. In Japan, about 1 year. After Koizumi, there has been no long-term prime ministers in Japan. This is a speech that he made in the Indian parliament. A different strategy now. A broader Asia that broke away geographical boundaries, meaning that Asia can be rhetorically expanded to a quite wide area. And this broader Asia will evolve into an immense network spanning the entirety of the Pacific Ocean, incorporating also the United States of America and Australia. And a region called the Arc of Freedom and Prosperity will be formed along the outer rim of the Eurasian continent. A map shows what this is about. A Japanese way of creating a sort of Japan, USA, Australia, India circle around China. There was some amount of nostalgia back to the 1980s when China was still small and there was lots of cooperation between Japan and USA and Australia and so on. And Japan was still added into this structure as a competitor to China. So this is only a rhetorical addition, a rhetorical encirclement. Something that the partnership, the Pacific partnership that USA is building right now resembles also a similar kind of structure. But also this was not much liked, especially in China. And Abe soon went away. The interesting thing is that there were elections, parliamentary elections in Japan only a couple of weeks ago. And Abe, his party, won. And he is bound to become the new prime minister whenever in the near few weeks the change takes place. We'll see whether he will return back to this kind of chess playing, because diplomacy is about chess. You make moves and the other party also makes moves. Or whether he has to think up something different. The next one, the next year President Fukuda Yasuo. He is the son of an earlier Japanese Prime Minister, Fukuda Takeya, who in the 1970s created warm relationships between Japan and ASEAN. Well, in this speech he said, when Asia-Pacific countries are hit with problems, they could come to their old friend and discuss how Japan solved that kind of situation. So he does not say thought leader. He does not try to build a coalition against China. But still there's a wish to place Japan into a venerable position. In Japanese there's a concept called senpai. This one here, senpai means an older colleague who is wiser. The idea being here that Japan has experienced it all. It had its first period of democracy in the 1920s, followed by dictatorship, military rule, all to the 1930s and early 1940s. Then back to democracy. It has seen very rapid growth periods and stagnation. It has seen a rapidly expanding population, and now a population which is aging fast and actually contracting already. Well, 2008, it was not yet contracting but soon approaching that situation. So it is an older colleague that has seen it all and could give good advice. So nothing concrete here. Then we come to Hatoyama Yukio. And he said in 2010, in a speech like this, in the 21st century, where we already are, where we already are, Japan will exist between the two great powers, America and China. So now a Japanese prime minister said that Japan is no more a great power compared with China and USA. So China is now on a higher position, and Japan is now on a lower position. Yet, Japanese people and Japan's culture will certainly contribute to world society in not too small manner. Outwards, especially about China, Japan now accepted that China is bigger and stronger and will continue to become so. And domestically, Japan still can be proud of themselves. They are important people and can do great things in the world. So at this moment, I think there was a change of this balance. Japanese finally accepted that they are at least a bit lower than the Chinese, with the hope that Chinese would be satisfied, but this was not yet satisfactory enough. The balance is still too near. There have been two other prime ministers after Hatoyama, but they have, as far as I have been reading their speeches, they have not made any similar kind of strategic diplomatic announcements. So the Hatoyama speech is what is still standing here. Then a couple of speeches by Chinese leaders. First, older ones, and then a newer one. 2005, when Jia Bao, the prime minister, when he was visiting Malaysia. At this point still, also earlier, but at this point still, he said that China will remain in an underdeveloped stage for a long period of time. So China is here placed not at the top, but still somewhere, not at the bottom either, but not at the top yet. Looking ahead, we are full of confidence. Our goal is to double China's per capita GDP of 2000 by 2010, and after that, to bring China's per capita GDP to $3,000 in another 15 years, meaning 2025. Not in 2030, but 2025. This will turn China into a country of moderate prosperity. This is quite moderate speed. China is not too powerful, we are quite humble, but we will go on economic activity and development. Hu Jintao, president, last year, in a Boao Forum for Asia, which is an Asian forum where important business leaders and political leaders come to give speeches and have negotiations. It's not a public forum, but an important one. This was a speech for Asians. Asians belong to one family. China and the Chinese and other Asians are one group. The people of Asia have an unyielding spirit of seeking self-improvement. All Asians are good people. They are industrious. They work hard. They study hard. They go forward. China cannot achieve development and prosperity without Asia, and Asia needs China for development and prosperity. Well, there's a small difference between China and Asia, nevertheless. Asia and China. They are together. Both need each other. And the goal is economic development and more wealth and well-being for all people. In the past 10 years, China's economy has enjoyed rapid and sustained growth. China's economic strength, comprehensive national strength and living standards have all reached a new high. So this is no more moderate. Now he says that China is high, both economically and national strength, meaning also military power. China is high now. We will make more investments in Asia and emerging markets, and at the same time give more economic assistance to developing countries in Asia. China has graduated from the position of a developing country to a donor country, which gives development aid in increasing numbers with its great wealth to the rest of the world and especially to Asia. So he is now talking from top down to other Asian countries. China will always be a good neighbor, good friend, and good partner of other Asian countries. So here comes the friend. Again, this diplomatic key word. The strong power says friend to lesser powers. We have full confidence in an even brighter future of Asia. Let's work together to make it reality. It's said here quite clearly and easily. If other Asian countries accept Chinese high position, its leadership position, then China will be a friend of them all. So Chinese are now talking from a position of leadership. But then we have this conflict in the maritime areas, fishermen and so on. But this is the picture painted of a situation where China would like to see itself in respect to the rest of Asia. So the balance has changed. Japan is no more the top. 100-year period of its history and Asian history has ended. And China is now placing itself at the top and will be doing it for time to come. And because we don't yet see an end of its economic growth in sight, the situation probably only will be go on deepening and deepening in the future. Unless the world changes drastically somehow. But even that kind of change is nowhere in sight. So this is the end of this lecture series on politics in East Asia. And every year will bring new happenings, new events in this. I don't know how many years this lecture will be dated enough, and after how many years I will have to lecture this again. Okay, thank you.